Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, this is PJ Farley from Fozzie, Trickster, and possibly your band, reporting to you from the road to let you know that you are listening to the Shattered Out Loudcast with Tom and Zeus. And also, I think we all agree, Joey Quesada should sell meatballs, not books.
The information provided on this episode should not and is not intended to ruin or enhance your enjoyment of the music discussed. Also, the opinions of the hosts involved may be considered profane, vulgar, or offensive to some listeners. Most of the following content is not meant for young listeners. We's about to get straight up dirty, y'all, so parental discretion is advised. In other words, earmuffs for the kiddies, please. You have officially been warned. Thank you. Oh, and one, two, fuck you. What up? Greetings and salutations. Welcome to Shout It Out Loudcast. Don't turn your radio dial. You're in the right place because the album review crew is back with episode 41. We are calling this one, When I'm Kissing Kitty, It Makes Me Hard as a Rock. And you beg me to put it smooth up in your boom shakalaka. But honey child, we know you only tolerate it for the love of money. You need to go back and play that over because that shit is straight poetry. Chief, Zeus, brothers, can you spare a dime?
I can't believe it took us 2 months to get to this hellscape right now. People will wonder, what happened to ARC? Be like, nothing. We just didn't want to do it.
Tony, we did our Demon Tier Patreon video on Sunday. Yeah, last night, right?
Yep, last night.
Okay.
3 of the questions were about you. One was like, where the fuck is he? And the other was like, why is he on 100,000 podcasts? And then one was like, is ARC gone? Like, Jesus Christ.
We're like, no, it's not gone. It's just been put on hold because no one wants to do this episode. And if you haven't been able to guess, this is Sonny's pick. Because I don't think Zeus and I would go near a Mark Torian led album.
Ooh. Oh yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Who? Well, why doesn't Sonny tell us? I'm like, oh, he's like a dollar store David Lee Roth. And Sonny called him what?
David Lee Rodriguez. That's not my penned name. People were calling him that in 1988.
That's so bad. Blonde hair and black eyebrows. What a great look.
Just he looks like, I was like, it looks like Frederick Douglass with David Lee Roth's hair.
Oh, Jesus. See, this is going to be bad.
I'm like, ooh, Frederick Douglass has got some shaking moves on him. Ooh,
1, 2, fuck you, Frederick.
That's why I had to do the little thing at the beginning, because between Kissing Kitties and Shooting Preachers and it's just Hard as Rocks, and there's all kinds of shit here.
And Frederick Douglass hip swiveling moves. Whoa!
Jesus Christ! Whoa. Oh, okay. Let's catch our breath. How long ago did we do Billy Squire? It seems like we did that like 3 years ago.
In 1981, we did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom, we did a poll.
Yes.
Best song from Don't Say No, the last album review crew. We did Billy Squire's Don't Say No. What were the song choices and how did it turn out?
Yeah, we got a lot of interaction with this poll. So the options were Lonely Is the Night, The Stroke, In the Dark, and My Kind of Lover. Lonely Is the Night ran away with this one, 36%. In the Dark at 26, My Kind of Lover at 20, and The Stroke at 18. We got a lot of positive feedback. We were kind of talking before we started hitting record that usually the more polarizing the album, the more feedback. You know, when it's an album like Don't Say No that is routinely liked or really liked, the feedback is a little bit more kind of tepid because it's not like, yeah, great album, great album. Next month, I have a feeling the Bullet Boys feedback might be pretty heavy duty, but let's get to a couple Twitter comments.
Did
on
you
the
say
poll.
Tepid?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I got to dumb it down. I'm sorry. Thank you. I'm sorry. Lukewarm. Does that make sense? Maybe. I don't know. John Schaefer. The riff on Lonely Is the Night is badass. It's the only correct answer. Our buddy Brad from Patreon. Thanks for the review, guys. Just thought of you all dancing around in your silk PJs. Kidding aside, Billy is a great singer. Yes, he is a great singer. See, Frazzle Dazzle says, In the Dark for the Win. There was nothing like dropping the needle on the vinyl as a teenager and hearing that sound and the buildup of the opening track. I agree. The opening to In the Dark is friggin' kick-ass. So there's a couple Twitter comments. We want to fly through feedback like we are starting to do. So let's turn it over to Zeus for some Book of Face comments.
Yeah, we got a few off the top. Like, oh, great pick, great pick. You're right, Tom. It's just generically light, and it's hard to get more from that. Brian Krizel says, to hell with anyone who says an unkind word about Billy. Last I knew, he was part of Ringo's all-star band. That is self an honor on par or higher than the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Wow. Okay.
Lee Graham, an inescapable album back in high school. Killer stuff. And what a band. From Bobby, how do you say his last name again, Tom?
Chouinard, right?
Chouinard?
Chouinard.
Chouinard.
Chouinard's thunderous drumming, equal powerful with Gary Moore, Ted Nugent, etc., to Billy Squire's unvarnished guitar work. Some of these songs are timelessly bulletproof and completely agree. Lonely of the Night takes top prize. Sure, some filler material takes the album down a bit, but not much. Over on our Loudcasters, John Kozis, accurate review. The album should have been an EP of the first half. It is, I am a huge Bruce Kulick fan. I only saw Billy Squire's The Tale of the Tape. I would have thought this would have been reviewed due to Bruce Kulick being on the album.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, Bruce may be on the album, but I don't even know what the fuck that is.
Me neither.
Yeah. Sneed Rock. You know what? You guys are right. I was super excited to hear this as I thought it was a perfect album from past memories. I hadn't heard the album in a while, and when I heard the review, it was spot on. The highs are in the stratosphere. The lows are pedestrian. It's funny how nostalgia plays a role in what makes an album a classic. Great pick, though. Billy is a legend.
Nice.
And then he also brought up one thing I didn't hear you say tough regarding the another Kiss connection. As Zeus said, this is the second record. The first one had, hi, guys, Bruce Kulick playing on it. Yeah, Bruce Kulick.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that's what we missed. That must have been his first debut album, right?
I guess so.
Tale of the Tape, I think, was the first album.
Yeah, that's okay. That's what they said. Yeah.
Over on our YouTube, Andy Patterson makes another Hey Guys in Kulick's voice about the funk. Come on, Tom. Mecca and the Soul Brother is a classic.
He's right. It is. And I made a joke about that because Mecca and the Soul Brother is Pete Rock and CL Smooth, one of the all-time greatest rap albums of the 90s. I don't think it's ever going to make it on ARC, but I appreciate the love.
Cody Brunette, after listening to this episode, I went out and dug up this album and remembered how much I used to love it. I never put Lonely Is the Night and Nobody's Fault But Mine together. Now I know why this is my favorite Billy song. Yeah, it's basically it. Yep. And then George Savastano, fellow Paisan, Tom, I assume.
Yep.
Great episode. Question. How can someone be interested in the mob and hate the Godfather? Are you fucking kidding me? That deserves a backslap. What the fuck?
Sonny,
we're back in the movies because the movie sucks.
Let me remind everybody who's listening that the same person who says the Godfather sucks is making us talk about Bullet Boys for the month of May. Remember that. That's your ARC public service announcement right there.
You know, it's funny because, as I was saying to you earlier, Sonny, like the question is like, you know, Sonny with you guys, we're like, Sonny's perfect. There's too many albums in the 90s. Tom and I are going to be like, this is great. This is great. This is great.
I agree. Oh,
and
no.
We add Sonny in the mix. He's going to say, this song sucks.
No. We need, right. We can't have a third person just be like, hey, this is great. Yeah, I agree. This is great. Yeah, this is great.
You like this? I like this. Do you like this? Yeah, I like this. Mm-hmm. And we're like, and then he'll come up with shit that we like never would be in our wheelhouse. So it's a perfect combination.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Sonny, I don't know if your ears were ringing last night, but yeah, you were a big part of the conversation. And thank you once again to all our Patreon guys.
Yeah. And then we were put in the really uncomfortable position of having to say nice things about you.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Because somebody said, why is Sonny on all these podcasts? Well, he said, well, okay. Because Sonny knows a lot about music and has like good, strong opinions that they're usually very bad, but at least they're well-informed and they're passionate opinions. So it's good to talk music with Sonny. And that's why we
mentioned how you're quick on your feet.
Yeah.
You have a good sense of humor and you're generally a good guy. But when you're on our show, we got to shit on you. You got to shit on us. It's right. Fucking people like, do these guys like each other?
Do you even like Sonny?
Like Sonny Booney. That's the new one. No.
So we're doing this trivia thing, and I had come up with a Pearl Jam question. And we're on the Monsters of Rock cruise, right?
Yeah.
Like seven guys in this room. And I asked the Pearl Jam question.
Pearl Jam on Monsters of Rock?
And it was something about the second album. Three of the guys. Pearl Jam had more than one album.
Oh, my God. And meanwhile, these guys are cheering for Ted Poley on the fucking Monsters.
Hell yeah. He was hella good.
Oh, God.
Geez. Yeah, Sonny, I was telling Tom, I spoke with Steve the other day. I was telling him I got through 2.5. I didn't get to part three. I'm like a little bit in the beginning of part three and listening to your cruise.
Yeah.
I just got to say this. If Sonny's affiliated with us, 1,000% Stephen Piercy will never touch this fucking the amount of shit that Stephen Piercy got from you guys. And I feel bad for what's his name, Chris, who's like apparently loves Rat and Stephen Piercy. I thought he was gonna cry. You guys were so brutal. And I was telling Tom, at one point someone brought up the fact Stephen Piercy had quietly overcome some health issues, including
Yeah.
And your fucking partner, Stephen Michael, gets on. He's like, it doesn't matter if you have cancer. You're a professional artist. You need to perform to the highest level of your ability. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? You're fucking kicking the guy because he had cancer and he had some vocal problems.
I expect him to play Lack of Communication and sound really good.
If I can tell you, $13.95 for a ticket, I want a refund.
We'll never get Piercy, and we'll never get any member of Faster Pussycat because we re-nicknamed him Ass Pollution.
Oh, Ass Pollution? Oh, God.
I heard Don Jameson say on the new program with Eddie that he's seen Faster Pussycat. Was it him or the other guy? I'm not sure, but said that
Jim Florentine or Don Jameson.
Said like they've seen Faster Pussycat like 1,000 times. They used to perform together and stuff.
Why?
On TV shows.
Why?
And then he said that was the best he's ever heard them in years.
It doesn't matter. They weren't good ever. This isn't a new problem. They were bad from the start.
I'm just saying he said the complete opposite. It was like the best they've sounded in years.
If you say that an 80s band sounds the best they've sounded in years now, that's not good.
They have like some fat guy in the band And then
they all have fat guys in the band.
I've seen videos of the bassist shit face and like falling backwards, like ham it off his ass. Disaster. Oh,
Jesus.
What did we get on fat surfaces again?
I don't know.
Or ass pollution. Sorry.
Because it just has, this is what happens.
Yeah. So let's get back and finish up our feedback. I think we have some emails, right?
Yeah. Sonny, why don't you take your email and then I got one to read too.
All right. So my email's from Penelope Red.
Sonny's reading his own email.
Yeah. This and the person actually says something about that, which is interesting.
Okay.
Good pick. Interesting that I tend to agree with Tom more than others, even though I'm apparently a split personality that Pooney isn't aware of yet. My two favorites are 2 Days Gone and In the Dark. Now that it's a Pooney pick next, I decided to make a suggestion of my own to offset the disappointment that's likely to come.
Uh-oh.
If anything, it'll give you an opportunity to discover some music that'll be new to all of you. My choice is a band called Red Sea. They released an album called Blood in 1994, but it's not grunge. You'll find it on YouTube since it probably isn't on any streaming services. I believe it's also available to buy online if interested. I'll guarantee this Dark Horse pick will outshine anything Sonny decides to choose. I'm the better half of his subconscious. Bye for now.
Well, you know, Sonny,
you are wrong.
Has anybody heard of Red Sea?
So I went and checked it out because, okay, you sent me this email.
Yeah.
And so supposedly I'm telling myself, but whoever Penelope Red is, I checked out Soul Shaker, Dust to Dust, and Wolves at My Door. Dust to Dust was my favorite. It was very bad company. The singer, halfway between Jolyn Turner and Paul Rogers. It was actually pretty good stuff.
That actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, the songwriting wasn't great. It was, it was very 80s.
Okay.
But but it sounded good. It's a little cheesy at times, but it was good. Better than the Bullet Boys.
Yeah, you know what I think of when you read this, Sonny? I think of the guy from Office Space. What band is this? We're never gonna review it on the show. But thank you.
One more email. This is from our good buddy Gary Cap. Good pick, guys. The three video songs, The Stroke, In the Dark, and My Kind of Lover, made me a fan of this album because you could not get away from these on MTV. It seemed every time I turned on MTV, one of these videos was playing. On another note, ARC must have a worldwide influence in music media. I just received an email about the latest issue of Rock Candy magazine, and in it is an article on bad English. Sonny was right. I've heard more about bad English in the last 12 months than I have in the last 12 years. Nice. That's our buddy Gary Cap. All right. This feedback.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. we're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
All right. Let's get into it.
Let's move forward with, it's not the Bullet Boys. It's
no
Bullet Boys.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. This is your pick, Sonny. So go ahead. Floor's yours.
All right. So before we start with history, I figure I start with some stories because Mark Torian is one of those guys. Remember how Bernie Sanders was getting photoshopped and everything?
Yes.
Remember that for a while, yeah, right? Yeah. Mark Torian is one of those guys that, like, supposedly he was at the first moon landing. He was at JFK's assassination. Like,
why?
Like, if for some reason, he's involved in a lot of shit. That has nothing to do with the Bullet Boys, okay? So I wanted to share some stories with you. You can tell me whether it's crap or not. And I've got some, we'll just go. All right, so some of the stories. First of all, he worked with Motown, okay? So Mark worked with El DeBarge. Remember Who's Johnny? Remember that song?
I'm gonna feel right? The rhythm of the night.
That's right.
Yep.
Played guitar for him on one of his first tours. They opened for Ashford and Simpson, blah, blah, blah. Through that, he meets Berry Gordy. Berry Gordy supposedly was a pseudo mentor for him, taught him a lot. And supposedly Benny Medina. Now, if you don't know who Benny Medina is, Benny Medina is like a music mogul. He was an A&R guy at Motown. He was an A&R guy at Warner Brothers. He manages J-Lo, P. Diddy. And supposedly Benny Medina is like a guru to Mike Torian. And calls him all the time to see what's up with the Bullet Boys.
Why? And I mean that since and I mean that sincerely. I'm not.
I don't even know what to believe.
Wow.
I don't even know if that's true.
Okay.
All right. Next story. Mark Torian was almost named as Randy Rhoads' replacement.
Oh God.
In Ozzy. Okay. So here is Mark's side of the story.
Okay.
He had the gig. The LA Times wrote a story on it and released it. Sharon gave Mark a date to be ready. They were sending a car to pick him up for the tour. The car didn't show up for 3 days. So basically they ghosted Mark. Then on day 4, Sharon calls Mark's mom and told her that Mark was too young. He was 20 to be on the road. And then Ozzy went on tour with Bernie Torme and the rest is history. Rudy Sarzo actually mentions it in his book. So here is what Rudy says. All right. One evening, a friend picked up Ozzy, drove him to the rehearsal studio, introduced him to a young local guitar player named Mark Torian. Before the young man played a single note, the friend made sure that Ozzy was all coked up, so pumped up
God.
That you would stun a rhinoceros with the amount of blow he took.
Oh, jeez.
Ozzy says, I can't fucking bloody believe it. He's great. He's the next best thing. As Ozzy was jumping around the room while Mark was doing a flurry of guitar riffs and hammer-ons. That's it. I want you to start rehearsing tomorrow with Rudy and Tommy. Ozzy told Mark as a friend shoved more blow up his nose. The next afternoon, Tommy and I, meaning Rudy, went down to SRR Studios in Hollywood to rehearse with Ozzy's latest discovery. Halfway into the crazy train, Tommy and I looked at each other in total disbelief. Tommy says, damn, that's some new kind of information coming out of your guitar, boy. So Tommy was frustrated, threw down his drumsticks. What do you mean? Mark says. Tommy says, for starters, it sounds like a freaking train wreck. You haven't played a right chord pattern in a solo yet. Have you even heard the record? Mark said, well, yeah. And you can't tell that what you're playing is in the wrong key, Tommy says. Well, it sounds fine to me, Mark replied. Tommy and I just looked at each other, shook our heads. We got to call Sharon right now and nip this in the bud.
No.
The next morning, Ozzy resisted our advice. Ozzy says, well, how about if we just bring him on the road like we did Brad and break him in during the sound checks? Tommy says, Ozzy, you don't understand. The kid can't tell whether he's playing the right key or not. He just doesn't get it, and he might never get it. So Ozzy said, oh, bloody hell, I'll call him and tell him he's not going to work out.
Wow.
So both stories technically, I guess, could be true, right? Because if Ozzy said, you're the guy, Sharon sets it up to pick him up.
Right.
But then Tommy and Rudy come back on the other side and go, homie's not playing the right key. Like, what do you want me to do?
And right? then he becomes David Lee Rodriguez of the Bullet Boys.
All right. Mark Torian was named as Rat's guitar player once.
Yes, I heard that. Yep.
So Mark's story is that he was in Rat for a couple of years in the early 80s. Demartini started with Rat, but he wasn't working out. So Piercy and Crosby asked Mark to join as a guitar player. According to Mark, he helped write part of You Think You're Tough. But when you research it, Mark's got no credit. Exact quote from Mark's interview was, Piercy said I was a great guitarist and a better singer than he was, and I needed to go start my own thing. That's why I left Rat. Okay? Here's what Blotzer said. Blotzer said, we had a guy named Mark in the band for 4 months, not a couple of years. He didn't help write any Rat songs. Oh, Warren DeMartini left for 4 months, and this guy, Mark Torian, came and played from June to September of 1982. Okay, so believe who you want to believe there. Mark auditioned for Motley Crue in the 90s.
Oh, God.
Okay, so supposedly, Nikki reached out to him, said they were looking to replace Vince. After the audition, Nikki told Mark that he was great and then asked if Mark knew who the guy for the Scream was, because the Scream was opening for Bullet Boys.
Yep.
And that's how Karabi got the job.
Wow.
Mark says he and Lonnie discovered DJ Ashba.
Yep.
Right. And that Ashba was in Bullet Boys. So were 70 other members. So you can't really count that.
Right.
Mark says he told Jason Hook to change his last name to Hook because his name was stupid from Five Finger Death Punch.
Oh my
but God. You're going to love this last one. The Bullet Boys discover a band on the West Coast. Mark says he and the Bullet Boys discovered this little band playing in Seattle, basically doing covers, including supposedly a cover of Smooth Up In Ya. Okay. While the Bullet Boys were on tour, they went and saw the band, and Mark told this band that when they're ready to tour, they could open for the Bullet Boys. And in the end, they ended up doing exactly that. We helped discover Alice in Chains.
No, I believe that. Yeah. Yep.
I don't believe they were doing Smooth Up In Ya, though. That's hard to believe.
Alice in Chains was a glam metal band before they became grunge.
Yeah.
They were very glammy before they became like sludgy metal grunge. Yeah, I believe that. Yep. Yep. Wow.
All right. So let's move to a little history. Formed in 86, Southern California. You got Mark Torian on, Dave Lee Rodriguez, on vocals, Mick Sweet on guitar, Lonnie Vincent, so a lot of people think it's Vincent, it's actually Vincent, on bass, and Jimmy DeAndre on drums. So this story actually all starts with King Cobra. According to Carmine, Lonnie, Mick, and Mark were all in the band, but then took all the songs they intended for the next King Cobra record and started the Bullet Boys. According to Mark, he was hired by King Cobra just to sing on some live dates. Supposedly, Lonnie was already in the band, talked him into it. Money was a major issue, so Mick, and Lonnie left. According to Mick, Mick wrote songs that ended up on the first Bullet Boys record because every time he initially offered them up to King Cobra was struggling at the time, Carmine would take one of his songs and start asking people what they thought of it, and then like somebody like Gene wouldn't like it, so then he would come back to Mick and say, well, I don't like that song. So Mick got frustrated and go, well, I'm not going to share any more songs with you then. So Warner Brothers ends up signing them, the Van Halen tie. They hire Ted Templeman, the Van Halen tie, to produce and Toby Wright to mix. Some say co-produce because he had just finished Justice for All record. According to Mick, there was no conscious effort to be the next Van Halen because Mick is really more Billy Gibbons, Jeff Beck anyway.
Yep.
But if you ask me, were they trying to bring back like David Lee Roth, Van Halen? I think so. That's just especially in the mannerisms and a lot of what Torian was doing. Of course, these guys were already influenced by Van Halen. I mean, you got Ted Templeman, they're on the Sunset Strip, they're from Hollywood. Like a lot of comparisons were going to start anyway. So that is what it is. It probably helped them sell some records. It probably stopped them from growing platinum too, right? Because if you're trying to be the next so-and-so, that doesn't usually work out long-term. Templeman has said in interviews, he spent a lot of time refereeing because these four guys never liked each other from the jump. They started fighting immediately because the band, the record company wanted to wait 9 months to release the album after it was done. The manager says, no way. Guys, you don't understand. This band's not going to last 9 months. They need to get on the road and start doing shit. Otherwise, they'll be broken up before the record releases, right? Mick has said in interviews, Ted showed up when he wanted to. Why? Because it was Ted Templeman. We burned about $2,000 a day in the studio. It was so expensive that we would have had to sell 2 or 3 million copies to even recoup the record. Okay. So in recent history, the Bullet Boys broke up in the 90s. Mark has kept the Bullet Boys alive in some sort of fashion the entire time. He owns a trademark. 2019, Mick, Lonnie, Jimmy come back without Mark in a band called Lies, Deceit, and Treachery, which is part of the lyrics of a song on this album with Andrew Freeman playing. They were on the Monsters Rock Cruise. They're fucking amazing. Andrew Freeman was amazing. 2020 comes along. The original four decide to get back together. They go back on the Monsters Rock Cruise. They actually sounded pretty good together. Okay. First gig was December 2019. Coincidentally, their last gig was in December at the same place, Whiskey O'Go-Go, 2 years later. So what happens is in 2021, after they played a few dates and then, you know, COVID hits, they had to cancel a bunch of dates. They come back in 2021, play a few more dates, and they have this December 16th date at the Whiskey. Lonnie misses his flight for the show, which to most people, that wasn't abnormal because Lonnie missed a lot of flights to a lot of places during the Bullet Boys world, right? Mick and Jimmy, they want to cancel the gig because they're like, we're not going to play without Lonnie. Mark's like, I'm not letting the Whiskey O'Go-Go go downhill, or I'm not going to ruin my relationship with them. I've got the Bullet Boys name. I've had the great relationship with them anyway. So I'm going to go do the gig acoustic. Mick and Jimmy are like, don't go do this gig acoustic. That is not a good idea. That's not what the fans want. He's like, I'm not letting the fans down. I'm not letting the Whiskey go down. So he went and did the gig acoustic. I saw some stuff on YouTube. Mick and Jimmy were right. You shouldn't have done that fucking gig. Because that gig came out like shit. Okay. Yikes. So in the end, the original four break up again. Mick says he's never talking to anybody on that side of the world at all, except for maybe Jimmy. And Mark is out with the, well, Scab Bullet Boy still, right? Yeah. So there, it is what it is.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the only thing I know about the Bullet Boys is obviously Smooth Up In Ya, then, you know, the lead singer. And the constant, let's have a discussion about the band and everything you mentioned already. I don't understand. Even Wikipedia says Torian drew comparisons to David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
From whom?
Yeah.
How? What was it? The blonde hair? Was it the Ted Templeman? What was it?
It's the mannerisms on stage.
Okay. That's it. Okay. Because I don't. When we get into the track by track, I'll tell you who I really think he reminds me of, but it's not David Lee Roth. And for years I've Ted Templeman and they were going to be the next Van Halen. Like, I don't know what you guys are on right now, but they were not going to be the next Van Halen.
Yeah.
No.
So I'll tell you how it came about the album. Then obviously I'm going to pass it on to you guys.
Yeah.
It was Smooth Up In Ya, the video on MTV. Yeah. I remember hearing the vocal thinking, who the hell is that? And then listening to the song, I hadn't really heard a lot of Motown or soul or R&B. I'm 18, about to turn 19. So all of the songwriting felt a little different, right? Because it had an element of R&B and kind of soul in it. But it felt different than what everybody else was doing. At the same time, it was a little bit familiar. Then I started hearing things about they're the next Van Halen. I'm thinking, I'm listening to the guitar player and he ain't fucking Eddie Van Halen. That's for damn sure.
Right.
And then I'm listening to the vocalist and he's 10 times better than Roth. So I don't understand why.
Whoa. What just happened?
My personal opinion.
Okay.
His vocals are 10 times better than David Lee Roth.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm like, I don't know why they're getting. And then when I watch the video again, I'm like, it's the move. It's They happen to be from California. They happen to have Ted Templeman. They happen to be on Warner Brothers. Homie's got blonde hair. He's trying to move around like David Lee Rodriguez here. Okay, gotcha. I bought this album the day it came out because I was working at Target. I was at Music and Movies Department at the time, and I was hooked. The song hooked me immediately, and that's how I got into the album.
Yeah, the very first time I heard this album is the day after Sonny picked it for ARC. I mean, I'm all into, you know, the glam, the hair metal, the Sunset Strip. I mean, we talked about that ad nauseum on ARC about all the different albums we've done. I love that. But I knew Smooth Up In You. Very, very impressed. I mean, in all seriousness, very impressed with the vocals on that. And very impressed with the groove of the song and how it did stick out. It was different from what was going on. I had heard Hard as a Rock. I don't know if I heard it on satellite radio, whatever. I'm like, this is kind of kick-ass, but I never bought the album, and I never really heard anything more about them. Like a lot of these bands, even if they had a second or third album, you would hear like one song or another song. I never heard anything from them. And then it just became like this, like written in punchline, like, oh, who, the Bullet Boys? It just became like a punchline. So, full disclosure, when you pick this, I'm like, he's got to be punking us on ARC. There's no way. There is no way Sonny really likes this album. But you just did a 10-minute News Center 5 analysis of the history of the band. So I know you like this band. So
you guys have done Highway to Hell. You guys have done Automatic for the People, Pearl Jam's 10. We have never had a breakdown of the history of an artist on this show more than we just had on the Bullet Boys. God bless you. More power to you. You had the info. I'm glad you shared it. The Bullet Boys. Bullet Boys, not the Bullet Boys. I apologize. Sonny, this was my go-to. 88, 89. Any kind of album that came out from this era and this type of music that hit, I don't know, Countdown, that hit, what do you call
Headbangers.
It? Headbangers Ball. If it made it, I saw it, I got into it. So when I heard this song, I was like, I liked it. I liked the song a lot. And back then I was really into images of bands. So I'll be honest with you. I'm like, this guy's a fucking goof. So let me see what else comes out. And when they came out with their second one and it was For the Love of Money, like, fuck that band.
Fuck these guys.
And so I never listened to any of these other songs on this album. I didn't know what I was going to. So when you picked this, I didn't know where this was going to fall. Am I going to get a bunch of stupid shit? Like, in my mind, For the Love of Money? Or am I going to get Smooth Up In You? You know, 9 other tracks like that. Well, 8, because For Love Money is the other one. So it was a discovery for me. I hadn't heard the band. I only heard the 2 singles that they had. And I love it when I get into an album review crew episode where this is all new to me. And you guys have no idea where I'm going to come down on this. So, that was my discovery of Bullet Boys' debut. So,
all right.
Cover.
This cover's always been interesting to me because
it has.
Yeah, because I like the photo. The part that's interesting to me is when the bullet is going through. I get it on the where it's coming out of that the apple would, you know, feather out, I guess.
Yep.
But why is it feathering out on where it went in? You would think that it goes in like into an asshole. It comes out the other side.
Of course, Sonny's nice image. Of course, Sonny's reference analogy is something going into an asshole. That's how he. Yeah. Yikes. Sonny, honestly, it depends on the kind of bullet.
Okay.
It's as simple as that.
But then I sent you guys that YouTube video. I'll put that clip of the YouTube video I sent in when we release the when we release the episode. I'll put it on the Facebook thing.
Yep.
But when I saw it in slow motion, I'm like, oh, well, I guess that's how it goes. I think it's interesting. I think it's cool.
It's weird because, okay, the Bullet Boys. Okay, now granted, there's a bullet. There's 2. The apple is sitting on a bullet.
Yeah.
The apple's sitting on like a shell, and then you get a little bullet going through it. But like you have an apple. Like, This is Bullet Boys is like a badass 80s name, and you have an apple. Like I don't get it.
What do you want? Someone's brain to be blown out?
No. I'm thinking of
he wants to light people on fire.
I'm thinking of like a fucking Rambo type guy, like a bandolier or like a machine gun or something. Not a fucking slow motion of a apple. Like whatever. It's fucking dumb. But can we talk about that? Can we talk about the fucking horrendous back picture? Cover? Because I'll tell you right now, when I first looked at this, I'm like, oh, this is nice. This is a female-fronted rock band. No.
What are you talking about? Mark's presenting the Bullet Boys. What's the problem?
Dude, Mark, that's a woman.
It's Frederick Douglass with David Lee Roth's hairdo.
I don't know.
Poison's 10 times worse.
I what is happening right here? Just
okay, can I make an observation?
Please.
I have the CD, so it's like a remastered version. So there's a couple of different clips.
Okay.
Newspaper articles or magazine articles of the band.
Okay.
What I picked up on, the bass player Lonnie likes to have his top button always unbuckled and then his fucking belt over it. What the fuck is that?
That's not a good look.
Every fucking photo of him is the same way. Every video is the same way. His top of his pants is unbuttoned like Al Bundy in a Thanksgiving episode. And then the belt is over it.
Maybe he just likes the, it's uncomfortable to have that top button for him.
And then look at the fucking Oshkosh McGosh belt he's got.
Yeah.
Like Murph special from fucking preschool.
I'm sorry, I can't take my eyes off whatever Mark Torian is wearing and doing. It's just very distracting.
He's just wearing a jacket.
No.
Don't look at the belt.
He looks
never
good.
Mind that. Look at the belt.
He looks good.
And what's written in the sand in front of them?
This album sucks.
That's not sand. That's the top of a roof.
Okay, whatever they. I can't tell. I don't know.
It's just graffiti.
Okay.
What's also interesting is the song list. It doesn't match what's on. Like the listing of the songs doesn't match.
It matches what's on Spotify. That's the order on Spotify.
Crank Me Up's not last on Spotify.
No, the CD, the F9 is the last song on the CD.
Yeah on the album, it has it different.
Oh, you're talking about the
remastered CD.
You're talking about the vinyl, Sonny.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm looking at the back cover of the CD online. Yeah, it has that's the order that Spotify has.
My remastered version is correct, I believe.
Yeah, remastered. Is it all new songs?
All I want is the next like Creatures Fest or cruise that Sonny's on is to fucking parrot this image of him wearing his pants, his top button of his pants off, and a big belt going around it.
Open up the inside of the CD, Zeus. Take the CD out. What's the image under the CD?
This guy. The cartoon guy.
Yeah.
From the videos. Now,
okay. Well, he's got an axe splitting his head in half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know why? Because I think that's the look that we're going to make after we had to listen to the album.
Cartoon thingies, I didn't quite get.
I don't get any of it.
It's like that crumb guy. It looks like those type of cartoons or whatever. What is this look?
Dude. that's the face you make when you say, I can't believe they paid me to do this. I don't know.
But this is what I was talking about, Sonny. Look at all these like magazine articles.
Oh, yeah.
He's got the same fucking thing on every one of his pants. What the fuck?
It's his it's his look. Don't be hating on Lonnie.
Oh my God.
I had too much turkey for Thanksgiving. I gotta Al Bundy my pants.
But I'm ready to shoot the preacher down with my top button undone.
I'm gonna be throwing ropes at the preacher.
God almighty. Oh.
All right, let's get some facts.
There's more?
Yeah. The album came out September 20th, 1988. It made it all the way up to number 34. The album went gold. It was produced by, legendary Van Halen producer Ted Templeman. And Sonny mentioned it earlier, engineered by Toby Wright. Toby Wright of Carnival of Souls.
Yep.
And also of Alice in Chains.
Yep.
So Toby makes a couple appearances on our show. And that's what I got on this album.
Yeah, this is interesting. So Kerrang! Magazine, which is, you know, one of the more popular like rock metal magazines, gave this album 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Yep.
What the fuck? How?
Sonny Pooney was a writer for them.
Sonny Pooney worked for Kerrang! Magazine.
during his shift at Target when he bought this, he also worked for Kerrang!
I will tell you before we kind of start on the tracks.
Yeah, go ahead.
You got the hair metal fans, the melodic rock fans, whatever you want to call them. That's basically what I am. And then you got, you know, somebody like Stephen Michael, who's a little bit older. He's into the new wave of British heavy metal. You got Righty, that's into some of that crazy power metal, screamo, fucking pirate metal shit. BC's kind of the same way, into like Lizzie Borden and all that fucking crazy
power
shit.
Power Tiger, what is that right? band that he listens
power
to?
Powerwolf.
Powerwolf, yeah, yeah. You get all these guys in a room, they would tell you this was the last good album from a hair metal band until Bang Tango and Bangalore Choir and fucking Sea Hags and all those fuckers fucked it up for everybody. Yeah. This was the last. This, everybody in that room would agree, great album. Like,
so
that's
like
why.
Debut album by a band? Or
no,
like,
just a great album. So like just a great rock
Motley
album.
Cruise and Rats afterwards, they sucked.
No. They love all that stuff. They love all that stuff.
Okay.
But this is probably the most folks in our genre of music would say this was really the last of the good hard rock until hair metal basically became a parody of itself. Now, you can't, you know, what Kiss is doing and Crew is doing. Those guys are legendary fucking bands by this time. But the stuff that comes out after this, dude, some of the shit is just unbelievable. So that's why the Kerrangs of the world give it 4.5 stars, because anybody who loves this genre of music, whether they really, I'm really not a huge Bullet Boys fan, overall, right? Yeah. But anybody who's kind of this melodic rock fan, this album kind of hit home. After you get past the shit of it's a wannabe Van Halen bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing for me is, and we'll get into the tracks. We'll start that up shortly. In 1988, I can see this album being huge. I can see it being different and loved, and the vocals are soaring and, you know, the songs are whatever. To me, and maybe I'm kind of putting the cart before the horse here with this, I just feel like it doesn't age well. I just think it's very 88. It just doesn't stand. When you listen to some of those other albums from 88, yeah, you can tell that they were from that era, but they still sound like, okay, like this just sounds that it's that era and that's it. So I won't disagree with you. I could see back in 88 people like, okay, this is pretty kick-ass. It's a good rock record. Yeah.
Ready to go? First track.
Hard as a rock. All right. So song's got a lot of punch. I love that it starts right away. And goddamn, dude, the earworms, the bass notes right before the lyric starts, the every double snare hit, the harmonized vocal 40 seconds in, the start stops in the perfect places, the tip, 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 tips, the vocal gymnastics at the end. Like, if you want to show or have an alien hear what 80s sexed up hair metal sounded like, this is the perfect 187 seconds to have them listen to. I absolutely love the kick-ass start to this album. And it just shows. This song shows. You don't got to be a superstar. You don't got to be a musical genius. You don't need Holly Knight. You don't need Desmond Child. You don't need all that stuff. You just need somebody who can sell a melody, something that's a little sexed up, and it's got some, I don't know, just hummability. And you remember this shit forever, dude. Awesome, awesome song. It's shitty that it was not a single.
I totally agree. I think this song is a fuck. I don't know how this song was not an 80s staple. It's got an incredible groove. It's just got like a driving. It's like a great driving song. It's just got a simple up-tempo, mid-tempo beat. The chorus is catchy as all hell. Like what you said, Sonny, about the little bass noodling in between. The vocals at the end, I'm like, all right, this guy, I don't think I've ever said settle down more in the during an album. I'm like, this guy needs to fucking get a grip here. But I love how right around the same time, Kiss puts out a song, You Make Me Rock Hard. Then you got them doing Hard as a Rock. I love that late 80s, that sexuality. The song kicks ass. Now, when I first heard this, even before Torian's vocals, just the beginning of the song and the vibe, I'm like, this is giving me an All Systems Go, Vinnie Vincent, late 80s. I'm feeling that a little bit. And then as soon as Torian gets into the vocals, I'm like, this sounds like a long lost relative of something from Vinnie, which I love Vinnie Vincent Invasion, both albums, especially All Systems Go. But I was like, what a fucking great, great leadoff track. This song should have been huge. I'm surprised it wasn't.
We're talking about the Bullet Boys here, Tom. I've been listening to you shit on this album since the start. You just made this sound like fucking this is Metallica.
There's 10 more songs. Believe okay. me, there's 10 all more
right,
songs.
All right.
Settle down.
That's why I'm like, oh, man, he's letting me down. He likes this.
Oh, no. There's 10 more songs, my friend.
Okay. So I was asking Sonny before this. There just seems to be a discrepancy with the lyrics and who wrote what. And then Sonny kind of elaborated and told me, yeah, that's part of the problem. They're all fucking arguing and fighting. So this is credited on the album that I have, the CD, the remastered version of this.
Yep.
It says Bullet Boys. Yet the next song, Smooth Up India, will say all four members. It just says all four. So isn't that the Bullet Boys? And then there's another one that says Bullet Boys / Morris. I don't know who the fuck that is. I don't get any information on Wikipedia or this fucking, you know, album. There's nothing said about anybody named Morris. So I don't know. This one, I'm just going to say, was written by Bullet Boys. Okay. So I didn't know what I was going to get. As I told you, am I going to get Smooth Up In Ya or am I going to get For the Love of Fucking God Christ, Stop Playing This Song? This is a fun opening song. This is very cliche of the albums that I bought and liked when I was growing up during this time. This song would fit right in. It's a fucking rocking song. It's got melody. Oh my God. A band that has melody. Like that's the kind of melodic rock that I enjoyed during this era and stuff that I would play without somebody else needing me or me trying to see approval. Oh, yeah, I like this band. No, when no one's around, I will play this. That, to me, is the proof that I like something. This is a fast, rocking song. And it's the little things that I think I agree with Sonny about the Van Halen things. Like the little comments that he makes. Let's ride. He starts this off, right?
Yeah.
And he does these. And I think the correct phrasing that you call it, Sonny, is these vocal gymnastics that are all over this fucking album. And I'm shocked that you didn't bring up that he digs the way that you do me, whatever the fuck that stuttering party does in that song.
Or the G string shivers.
Hard as a cock. Hard as a cock.
Oh, nice.
Like, I just... It's a fucking great rocking song. I'm glad you said Vinnie Vincent Invasion, Tom, because now that you say that, I get where you're taking, like where you're thinking this is going. I would put this in there as that. I'd also put it as as a fast driving Great White type of song.
Yep.
And okay. I'm going to say this off the top. I don't know if Taurine is better than David Lee Roth, because if you had him sing on Van Halen albums, I don't know if I would like them better.
Right. I know what you mean.
But yep. He is a fucking, I didn't realize this. What a fucking vocalist this guy. He's got some pipes.
Yeah. He's good when he's singing, but not when he's going, oh, wow, wow, wow.
But he loves to show that off. I'll be honest. I enjoy it. I'm enjoying it. If I could do what he's doing, I don't blame him. Fucking go nuts with that shit. He is fucking amazing talent.
That boy's got talent. Yeah.
How the fuck was he the guitar player? No wonder they're like Stephen Pearcy said, brother, you sing better than I do. You might as well front your own fucking band. The poor Stephen Pearcy, he's never coming on. But anyway, yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Sonny. Great way to start off a fucking album. But I also feel like this is kind of a sleazy album and sleazy rock. And it has that little faster pussycat, fucking LA Guns kind of vibe to them.
Yep.
They're not very, and if you look up anything, it'll say glam metal band Bullet Boys. I don't know if I'd call them glam metal.
Sleaze metal.
Yeah, that's what I would think that
this is. Sunset Strip stuff. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
fucking cool, though.
Yeah.
How can
this
I
song is. There's 10 more songs.
Yeah. Nine, actually. Including
whatever.
Yeah.
It felt all like right. 10.
Like 10,000. All right. Let's go to the next song. Smooth Opinion.
Smooth opinion. Some think it's smooth opinion. Some think it's smooth hell opinion. Dude, I am not bullshitting.
Smooth opinion.
1988. People could not tell what the fuck he was saying.
Before the internet. Yeah, good right? point.
So, all right. So where does smooth opinion come from? So here's what Mark said in the interview. When God, this is hard to say.
The sentence is coming out of your mouth right now. Say it.
When El DeBarge was trying to pick up on his female friends, he would always tell them, if you come home with me, I'll go smooth up in you. Smooth as a baby's bottom, smooth as the finest silk you lay your body on. That's where I got the idea. Oh, my God.
Bullet Boys are influenced by DeBarge. I rest my case.
Pencil mustache.
So, also, supposedly, Gene was supposed to produce the album. So, Gene had heard the song. Gene said, you know what? You should write simple songs about simple things. Don't worry about the radio. And then Mark kind of thought, well, Slide It In, The Stroke, Lick It Up was all getting airplay. So, you know, whatever. I'm going to go do this. It was the first single. It basically fell on his face. The album was dead on arrival. Like it was not doing well. Video hits MTV, 24 hours. Bam. The song is huge. All of a sudden, they're sold out the next three nights. And they're like, what just happened? Right? So people listen with their eyes. I love the a cappella start. I love the groove. I like that it's more about the vocal and the melody than all the other things. You get the very Zeppelin middle thing before the solo. Doesn't last too long. You got two parts of the guitar solo fit pretty good. it kind of feels like an 80s Whitesnake song to me. I think that's why I like it. Again, the vocal gymnastics at the end. It works because Mark can pull it off. And I think he kept doing it over and over and over because he didn't want the comparisons. He wanted the David Lee Roth look and mannerism comparisons. He did not want the vocal comparisons. So he was going out of his way to show that he can do things that Roth can't do. I totally agree with you, Zeus. Mark can't go sing the Van Halen albums. Like, there's no way, right? It just wouldn't work. But the song, dude, it should be like on every 80s playlist known to man. It absolutely fits. It's a shame that the single didn't do well without the video, but thank God for MTV.
Yeah, Sonny, you kind of touched on a couple of things that I have written in my notes. I think of 80s Whitesnake, but I also think of a little bit of like Robert Plant, like Zeppelin type of groove. The thing that I love about this song is not only the chorus, which I think is just incredibly catchy to this day, but I love what the drums are doing. The groove in this song is very simple, especially during the verses. And it's just got like that sleazy, dirty vibe to it. And I think a lot of people, even me, who's like, we love all this music, we love all this genre. This is where I think the Bullet Boys fall under that category of like a one hit wonder. Cause people are like Bullet Boy, oh, Smooth Up In You, I love that song. I put it on my mixtape for 80s hair metal. I don't know any other song I've ever heard by the band before, but if that's a claim to fame, that's not a bad thing. Cause this song should, it, to me, it's still huge. They play it on Hair Nation, on satellite radio all the time. And I think that's because it's a fucking kick-ass song. It's a completely different type of song from Hard as a Rock, obviously. But it's got that real, like, just sleazy, dirty vibe. Very Whitesnake-ish, like you said. And I think Mark Torian on this sounds awesome.
Smooth Up In Ya. Again, as I was saying earlier, it has all four members written as songwriter. The song made it to number 71 on Billboard's 100 and 23 on album rock tracks or mainstream rock, whatever they were calling it at the time. So I'll tell you a quick story on this. We always used to joke, me and our other friend Jimmy, I've mentioned him a few times, that once the grunge and everything had come in, that this song kind of became like a fucking cliche and almost like a punching bag.
A punchline.
Yeah. So it's like, but I'd always picture like Eddie Vedder in his mumbling ways. We just did a live. This next one is for you, Seattle. And then he goes, be like, what the fuck? Like, this would be the most like, or if he did Cherry Pie, and yep. Pearl Jam does. Like, it would just be so, what the fuck are you doing? It's cliche and it's funny when you think of it that way, because the song is what you said. Any fucking 80s hair metal greatest hits album has to have this. And I don't know what I like better, the vocals, the bass line, the drums, or the guitar and the solo. The whole thing is fucking awesome. It's catchy. And I like the way that the song just goes. They don't rush it. There's space. They let it breathe. They let the fucking guitar go and the drums and the bass going. And you can hear each instrument and you get into that. Yeah, that makes it, in other words, great production. Oh, I send shivers. Every fucking song has got to have something that I'm like, what the fuck is he saying?
Shivers.
Yeah. I mean, I love the solo is a great solo. I love solos that go into it on their own beginning, and then they come right back to the chorus melody, and they play it, and they put a little funk to it. Oh, it's just so catchy as hell. Let's go to the video. First, I just got to say, that fucking wiggle that he it is the worst fucking thing. It's the, remember we were joking about this the other day. I'm like, who's the fucking Celtic guy used to call it the wiggle?
Antoine Walker.
He does a little Antoine Walker wiggle that he does with this like little move.
It's not good.
It's, no. It's not good.
Did you notice that the pants said meow?
Yes.
It's the video is not good.
And those are definitely like wrestling pants. They're not like metal pants. They're wrestler gear. I don't know what the fuck he's wearing. The guitarist looks like a fucking B-level Slash. Look, with the big bushy hand and the way he's holding the Gibson and down and the ripped shirt. It looks like a Slash
off the shoulder.
Yeah, it looks like a Slash ripoff. The bassist, I can't fucking now. I keep looking at his crotch now that I fucking see the photos. He's got that. He looks like the Cinderella bassist with the fucking long, straight blonde hair. But they all look pretty cool. Like for that era, it looked cool, except that fucking what's the name looks like. It just looks stupid with the fucking, the black guy with the fucking blonde, David Lee Roth blonde hair.
It's not made for you. It's made for women, right? It's 1988 and Warner Brothers knows what they're doing.
Pretty much. Yep.
Okay, Frederick Douglass. He needs to fucking, if they had a better looking front man or something different, he didn't look like a weirdo. Just whatever. But I think it's of the era. The video is typical. I thought it was actually pretty cool. It makes me like the song more, the way they're performing it, because you can hear, like, you know, as you're watching, like, oh, that's where the bass line. Oh, that's where the guitar. So it just, I thought it was cool. Nobody else has anything?
Oh, I was done talking about this like 10 minutes ago.
You don't want to talk about the video?
I said it's not good.
That's it?
Dude, what do you want me to say? How bad do you want me to bludgeon this band? They don't look good. He looks like a woman. They're not good.
It saved them.
Huh? From what?
Women, dude, I'm telling you.
They no like the guy, wiggle. No guy heard this song and then saw the video and goes, oh, I love the Bullet Boys now.
Well, it wasn't the guys. It was the women that saved them.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I thought it was cool.
I liked it.
Yeah. I didn't think it was bad. Let's got the fate. I just, never mind. All right. Let's find out who Joe is and why is he owed money or something. I don't know.
Joe Mutta.
Joe Mutta here.
What up? Ode to Joe. Okay, so I have nicknamed that little laugh thing he does because he's Latino. We're going to get canceled because I'm going to call it the Speedy Gonzalez thing. We're going to end up canceled. We're going to get canceled.
Dude, he's Spanish?
Yeah. I'm telling you.
Yes. He's not black?
No.
That's why he's David. That's why he's David Lee Rodriguez.
And he was definitely a black guy.
No,
that's why I kept wondering why they're calling African, like Latinos.
That's why I'm wondering why he kept calling Frederick Douglass. Ortiz is Dominican Republic.
Yeah, but he's black Dominican. Same thing with Pedro.
Here we go. This is the last episode. I'm so glad we waited to do the Bullet Boys because this is where we end.
Why? It's not racist to say that.
You called him Frederick Douglass. Frederick Douglass is black.
That's why, because I thought he was black.
But he's not.
He's black Latino.
To quote Seinfeld, I don't think we should be talking about this.
All right, getting back to Ode to Joe.
Go ahead.
So according to Mick, and I'm going to put words in Mick's mouth here, Zeus, I don't give a fuck what your CD says. I wrote the lyrics to this. Right. So that's Mick, okay? you get the cowbell start. It's a very classic Van Halen type kind of start, right? You could hear David Lee Roth kind of starting a song like this. Again, dude, the earworms with the snare hits matching the chorus melody, the harmonizing lyrics a couple of times in the second verse. So these guys bust on each other a lot. But the one thing Mick said positive about Mark, all of these takes of the vocals, 2 to 3 most of them, first take. Wow. Okay. So he always gave, so that whole yeah thing at the end, I get it. It's a little overdone. It works for me because I think Mark can pick it off, pull it off. But that's one take. Wow. Okay. Now, the debt that's owed to Joe. The song is about Joe Perry. Okay. Get it? Ode to Joe. O-D-E. Yep.
Debt that's owed to Joe.
Yep.
There you go. Great guitar.
There you go. There okay. you go. I love the song. Because it's a little crazy all over the place with the vocal. But it's Mark can pull it off. So it's a fun listen. And it's a quick song. I actually really like this song.
Yeah. Mark is I have to disagree with you completely because I think he's all over the place. Here are my notes right here for this song. The lyrics in the chorus is dumb. I said, and then at the end, I wrote, why is he screaming and cackling so much at the end of this song? When the song starts off, the musically, the groove of the song, I don't mind it. I think it's got a good like swagger or whatever. Honestly, I think Mark ruins this song for me. It's just, especially when he's like, what the debt they owe to Joe. And he's like, oh, to Joe. Like he just starts talking. And I'm like, oh no. I'm like, this is when the wheels start to fall off the Bullet Boy bus for me here with this song here.
Ode to Joe, credited to Bullet Boys. So I will give you the lyrics, and this is how I knew. Stevie had the lips. Joey had the licks. Together they would blow you away. The train kept a rolling right out of control, but they're back in the saddle today.
Dude, how obvious. I mean, come on. I understand the tribute, but my goodness.
Yeah. I think it's got a nice groove. There's a good, decent solo here. The debt they owe to Joe. Oh, okay. And then, baby.
Just,
dude, what is with the stuttering shit?
Mr. Tipton.
They're reading glasses.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the song's pretty cool. It's all right. Again, when I hear this, okay, what I will pick up on is this isn't a, like, here's fucking Bango Tango, or here's fucking TNT. This is a talented band. I think these musically, these guys are talented.
What gives you that impression?
Because they have a good groove, and they can write melodic music.
So so TNT and Bang Tango can't hang with the Bullet Boys?
No.
That's where we've gone right now? That just happened on ARC.
Yes. Why? You feel like the Bango Tangos should be elevated?
No, I think they all suck. What the fuck are we talking about? This
I'm
isn't
saying,
Aerosmith.
I feel that these guys are a notch above. And I feel, especially with the vocals, way ahead of everybody else. Talent-wise. And these lyrics, as sleazy and stupid as they are, they work. It works. Works for me. We're doing pretty good for 3 songs by these guys. Let's see if we can go to 4.
Hey man, I take my hand. Look at here. I said, no, mister, please. You can't bring a bad boy to his knees. Got a subtle way to say get out of town. Shift the preacher down. Black by night,
shoot the preacher down.
Oh, loaded.
I call these songs, this is me personally, I call them like Zep Halen, because it's got kind of a blues vibe, but it's got the Hot for Teacher vibe throughout the song, and kind of at the end, it almost ends like Hot for Teacher too. Mark said in the interview, song was written about the absurd evangelists that were on TV at the time. But, you know, people took the song too seriously. The Bible Belt was ready to basically cancel Polypoise because they were talking about shooting the preacher down. I love that the song builds quickly. This song would not work without Mark. And if you're going to repeat the chorus line over and over, you got to say it different every time, which works. I love this song. This, to me, this is the best song Van Halen ever wrote. This could be a Van Halen song.
I'm with you. I like this song, and I think I like it because this is the Bullet Boys trying to do Ice Cream Man. I get the Ice Cream Man vibe because the talking part, and then it kicks in, and it's got that. It doesn't sound just like Ice Cream Man, but it has that and a little bit of Hot for Teacher in it, and I think the groove of this song, the fast up tempo, this suits Torian's vocals. I think he does a nice job. I think the preacher breakdown is hilarious. Just put your hands upon the boob, dude.
And they'll all be healed.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the chorus with him just wailing, shoot the preacher down. I'm like, all right, this is cool, because you're right. It's definitely Van Halen-ish. And I think it suits the band and his vocal styles very well. So this is a good recovery from Ode to Joe, because I think this song's pretty cool.
Shoot the Preacher Down, written by the Bullet Boys and Morris. Who the fuck that is, I don't know. Yeah, I got the Van Halen vibe. I also got a little bit of a Sucker in a three-piece kind of, just the fast, like, and laughing and just having fun with it.
You mean the best song on OU812?
The drumming, I felt a little bit of Alex there a little as well. Yeah, this is the most Van Halen kind of tip of the hat to. He does have a great voice. That's what I wrote down on this. He has a great voice.
Yep.
But I have to, I can't not let say something. Did he say in the beginning of this song, "Looky here"?
No.
It's there in the lyrics. Looky here.
No, it says, it starts off. The first thing I hear is, "Oh Lordy."
But like towards the beginning, he says,
"Oh yeah, no, he doesn't." No, he says, "I saw a scary man come on to me and said, 'Hey man, take my hand. Looky here.'" Yeah.
It's the old black OJ skit from Howard Stern.
It's like, we're going to get fired. But he can pull it off because he's
black.
He's a minority. He can do it.
No, he's black.
He's not black.
He's black. He's a black Latino.
He's blonde.
What would you call the guy that's in Two Live Crew?
Chinese
black.
There's no such thing as Chinese black.
What is Tiger Woods?
Tablin Asian.
A golfer.
Remember in the fucking Chappelle show, didn't they do the race draft?
The race draft?
He got moved over. All right, let's go to the cover track next.
Oh boy.
Can't even walk the street.
For the Love of Money, Bullet Boys Sing. All right. So conflicting stories on this. Again, these guys don't like each other very much. So Mark's story is, I had the idea of doing the song because of my R&B background. We just started working on it, and the guys played it amazingly. We came up with our own rendition of the song, and Ted really liked it, so we threw it on the record. Mick's story. I demoed it in King Cobra. Ted asked me to bring in other ideas. I played a demo for him. He heard it on the demo, liked it, so I brought the idea to the guys. So they're both trying to take credit for this thing. And, you know, I think we're going to be on different planets on this thing. I actually like the groovy start. I love the call and answer type feel. I think this is how Van Halen would have done the cover if they did it. Mark screaming in the song worked for me. I like the little bass riffing they did in the middle to keep the original around a little bit. Love the way the song ends. But you got to remember, I'm 18 years old when this comes out. I had not heard R&B yet. So this opened me up to the OJs, which I hadn't heard before, which opened me up to the Temptations. So songs like Ain't That a Shame by Cheap Trick, or Chain of Fools by Little Caesar, or Dancing in the Street by Bowie Jagger. That's what kind of got me into, oh, there's other music I can go enjoy. And I love Motown today because of it. Mm-hmm. So it has a place in my heart. I actually, in my heart, this is one of the best covers a hair metal band has done. I love this song.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'll be honest with you, when I saw the title For the Love of Never in a Million Years that I think this was a cover, I just was like, okay. So it starts off and I'm like, okay, I like this groove. I like what's happening with the drums, the way the cymbals are just kind of rolling, the bass groove. And then I'm like, oh no, this is a, don't do this. And then I was just like, everything that Sonny likes about this song is the things that I don't like about this song. I do like the little bass breakdown in the middle, but like, I mean, if I could try to say something nice about it, Torian's vocals sound really, really good in it, but we've talked about it. Winger doing Purple Haze was completely unnecessary. This is right up there for me.
I blame Ted.
Oh, I do too.
I blame Ted. I think he looked at it going, guys, you don't have a ballad on this album. You're going to have to do something that the radio is going to play. Guys might want to try blah.
And like he said, Van Halen did covers all the time and they were successful in pretty much everyone they've ever done.
That's right.
So they probably figured, let's try this, but yeesh, I don't know.
For the Love of Money, Kenneth Gamble, Leon Huff, Anthony Jackson. It's the song that first recorded by the OJs, number 3 on the R&B chart, number 9 on the singles chart. It's the fucking, I think of The Apprentice. I think of that, this song. For the Bullet Boys, this made it to number 78 on US Hot 100 and number 38 from mainstream rock. This is stupid.
I don't get it.
So it's like, I guess that I would say this. It's like, I don't know, Rat going, you know, Track of My Tears is a great song. Let's do a cover of it.
Yeah.
Because it's a great song doesn't mean you should do it. So again, it's just there's no fucking possible reason that these guys should do this song. First of all, it doesn't work in a rock and roll hard rock band. If with all the songs that we've gone through, this sticks out so much that this shouldn't be in their wheels. Great. Mark could sing this maybe in his own personal soul station on the side. Why are you making this fucking band that's rocking out with Hard as a Rock, Smooth Up in You, and then you go to this? Like, it does. Whoever the manager is fucked up, because I think this killed their momentum, as I said. Like, when I was waiting for their next song, if Hard as a Rock was their next song, or Shoot the Preacher Down, I'd be like, oh, these guys are fucking rock. This is just stupid.
You bring up a good point. It's one thing to record it. It's another thing to release it as a single.
Yeah, which I'm going to get to you know, and of course he can hit all those vocal gymnastics. But yeah. What I want to get to is the part of this is if you look at the video, and the video will help explain why I'm like, huh?
Yeah.
It's a performance video. They're in concert. And you got people in the crowd. There's no way they're rocking out to this song. It doesn't work. You got people in the crowd like throwing their fists, like fucking, like they're in a mosh pit to this song.
Yep.
It's just stupid. It didn't work. It's dumb. It's, can they do it? Yeah, they did a version of it. Wonderful. It doesn't make sense for this album. I think it's career-wise fucking horrible for them. And I never took them seriously after they did that song. And I saw that as their second single. I didn't buy the album. I never got into them. And they became, oh yeah, Smooth Up In You. That fucking song's awesome. But why do I need to get into the rest of their catalog? They're doing stupid shit like this. Anybody want to talk about the video? Or are you guys all set?
No, it's just a performance video. No.
The sideways jumps aren't very masculine.
No, not good.
Those were a little interesting.
Yeah, him throwing on the shades in the middle of the video. No.
And the showing the Kim Possible. I don't know. I didn't need that either.
The Wiggles got to wiggle its way out.
I would have rather have seen the Wiggles perform this.
The Wiggles. It's just fucking dumb. Bad business decision. All right. We know Sonny's been dying to get to the next song.
Kissin' Kitty, Mount and Scream. Yeah, I like it. Bass and drums really matter to this song. Mick brought Kissin' Kitty to King Cobra. Carmine absolutely hated it. I think what Carmine was trying to do with King Cobra was he was trying to do something somewhat serious. And yep. He was worried he was going to end up in this 80s hair metal, sexed up Sunset Strip bullshit. And he comes from the 70s hard rock Rod Stewart, the Faces, and he wants to be serious, right? I love the guitar riff. I love the pace. The song gets me moving. I love that earworm of Kissin' Kitty and then wow, wow, right?
Yep.
And then you get, I'm getting all my knees. Kissin' Kitty, right? On the second. Earworms, fucking incredible. Then they changed the earworms different on the last chorus and the big live ending. Dude, I could listen to this song every day of the rest of my sexual active life. It is on my Get Busy soundtrack. I fucking love this song. This song is so great.
There are a lot of females out there that want to know about the Sonny Pooney Get Busy soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. We'll be releasing that as a special pre-order on our website soon. Yeah. You get Spotify playlist, maybe. Yeah. It'll be on Mark Torian swirl vinyl. Yeah. Kissin' Kitty. I love this because I love Vinny. I've said this before. I love the Vinny Vince invasion. I like Faster Pussycat. I like Britney Fox. I like the sleazy, dirty LA glam metal. This is a lost hit from all those bands that I just mentioned. I love it. I think the chorus is awesome. The groove is awesome. Victorian sounds great. The lyrics are ridiculous and catchy and awesome. Why would you not release? Now, again, I know 88, 89 is different era. Why would you not have released this as a single? I think this thing is hooky and catchy as all hell. This is, I love this. And it's hilarious.
Kissing Kitty, credit to written by the Bullet Boys. Yeah, this is so of the times. This is so cliche, but it's fun and groovy. Yep. It is so bad. It's good.
Yes.
It is so fucking horrendously cliched about everything. The way the music is, the lyrics, his vocal gymnastics that he's doing, and the solo. Does he say a pretty with a titty?
Oh, yeah.
Of course he does.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Give me a taste, kissing kitty, has been said in my house for a fucking month straight. Give me an ink, kissing kitty.
Wow, wow.
Yeah. You gotta shake your shoulders. Woo.
I love it.
Kissing, give me a taste, kissing kitty. Oh, okay. Next track.
Hell on my heels. All right. So story time. I worked for Target for 14 years. I almost got fired on year two.
For stealing this album?
Thanks to fucking Tony.
Uh-oh.
Okay. So it is Christmas 88. We've been playing. We both worked in music movies. We've been playing this album over and over and over. What we used to do is before the store would open, we would have a mic, like a phone on the speaker, yep, and put the phone in front of the boombox and let it play. And then it would play overhead. Right. We're on a day. Fucking Tony's got this CD in and I'm bebopping, doing shit all over the store or whatever. And we're going to open early that day. And I forgot we were opening early that way because it was Senior Citizens Day.
Oh, yeah. Kissing Kitty.
Okay. As Kissing Kitty's finishing.
Yeah.
They're going to go open the doors. I'm like, fucking turn off the music.
Turn off the Bullet Boys.
Open the door on Senior Citizen fucking day. And the first thing my senior citizens hear is 1-2, fuck you.
Fuck you.
And I'm like, I'm getting fired today. Somehow, nobody heard.
We'll get to that song, but what a great fucking way to walk into a Target. 1-2, fuck you.
All right. So the song, you get the Ooh, Honey Child. By the way, if you're wondering how many Honey Childs are in this album, there's four. The second one's in this song. I love the verses. I think the chorus would be boring as fuck if Mark wasn't screaming. When he says, clean up my act, dude, for some reason, if I'm listening to it in the car, I start singing along. I don't know why. I don't know if we needed the Speedy Gonzalez thing in the middle of the guitar solo. Okay. But then that breakdown, when he says, when you're in the pocket, and then the cowbell hits, dude, total earworm. And then it builds back up to another big live ending. Dude, it's hard to hate on this song. I really like this song.
The intro's just incredible. We already mentioned that. You said it. The chorus is lazy. The chorus is boring. But at this point in the song, or I should take that back, at this point in the album, I'm getting like, I'm honestly starting to get like tired and bored. And I'm like, Mark, you need to shut the fuck up. It's too much. Like, I can't, the song is too slow. This is a band. I hate when bands do this. The Bullet Boys are a band that, in my opinion, succeed when they're doing something mid-tempo, upbeat, hard as a rock, Kiss and Kitty, Shoot the Preacher Down. I don't want to hear this. This is not what I want to hear from them. And I don't think they do a very good job of it. And I think the only thing that salvages it in any way is Mark's vocals. But I just think this is kind of a bore of a song for me.
Hell on My Heels, Bullet Boys, and Morris. Fuck that, Morris Day and the Time. So, you know, we already talked about the opening. 1-2, fuck you. I think this is a little AC/DC. I hear maybe it's because the lyric, Hell's Bells. That, you know, guitar crunch and move and the groove that's going with it. And Hell on Wheels, Cinderella.
I thought of that too, but that song's better.
It's the chorus of the Hells. The vocals are fantastic. And that breakdown, mid-breakdown, take it down. Doomed.
Yep. When you're in the pocket, tick-a-tick.
I'm with you. I agree with you. I like it. I like the song. I think it's great. I think it's just one of those, you know, where would I ever find this song if it wasn't for Sonny? I like it. I really actually like this song. I like the groove and I like the lyrics and I think it's fun. And I like that it's a little bit different. I don't want the same shit throughout the whole album. I like it. Now, let's go to the next track. And why do I know this fucking terrible song? But here we go.
Crank Me Up, 24 Blue, hut. I don't understand why. I don't understand why that's in the front. If you didn't think they could get any faster, well, here you go. The song rips for a couple of minutes before you get a little drum break to get a chance to breathe. I love the guitar riff. The song absolutely blasts you, gets your heart racing. The simple snare hit before the first verse, awesome. Then you start getting, and Zeus just said it, that AC/DC vibe. The reason you're getting the AC/DC vibe, the Bullet Boys go-to is start, stop the music. So that way you can concentrate on what Mark is doing, right? And I don't know if he does that because you want the vocal to stand out or he plans on playing guitar live, which he does, and he doesn't play usually when he's singing like the verse, right? So I don't know if that's why the start stop is happening. Somebody basically told Mick, play as fast as you can. Thank God it doesn't last too long in the guitar solo. Then you get the boom chakalaka at the 302, which works for me. And the reason you have heard this song, ladies and gentlemen, is because we have used it 310 times on Growing Up Rock as our intro to the Crank It Up spotlight. That's why you know the song. Tom's text me, goes, that's why I know this fucking song.
Why the fuck is this song starting out with him calling a football snap? What does that have anything to do? How is that even remotely connected in any way, shape?
Blame Ted.
This song just is fucking just terrible. It's just terrible. It's terrible. What is happening here? I'm telling you right now, This band has shown on a few songs that they can do good things. But every time they do something good, they go call a fucking shotgun snap at the beginning of the Grown Up Rock theme. Why? It's terrible. It's got nothing to do with anything. The song is too fast. I was just saying how I don't like them doing slow, like Hell on My Heels or whatever the fuck that dumb song is. So instead they hit fast forward and they do Crank Me Up or whatever. I don't even know the name of this song. Oh, God.
Crank Me Up, written by the Bullet Boys and Slash Morris. Yeah, the 24 Blue is just beyond stupid. Imagine him as a quarterback on the field doing his little wiggle. Get ready to 24 Blue. Like, dude, he would get fucking annihilated. It's bad Van Halen. That's what I came up with.
This isn't Van Halen.
Them trying to come up with like a Van Halen Shoot the Preacher Down Part 2, and it's terrible. Go back to the first track, Shoot the Preacher Down. Stay in that lane.
Yeah.
This one, horrendous. And Crank Me Up? No. Turn it down.
Yeah.
We're not cranking this song up. This is just bad. I don't know what they were thinking. It's just no melody, nothing.
Nope.
Hopefully they got two more tracks to redeem themselves. Let's go to second to last.
Badlands. All right. So Mick says we purposely didn't release a ballad. Warner Brothers didn't ask for one either. Bullet Boys don't really like ballads anyway. This thing, I think, was supposed to be like one of these cynical songs about getting beat up in the LA scene, kind of like a Welcome to the Jungle type thing. When Mick had a demo, Mick had written this, and it was more like Dio on the demo. So Ted kind of helped form the song. In the end, it's still like we're not talking about Kissing Kitties anymore. So it doesn't really match like the rest of the album. I don't ever really skip it, but I don't look forward to this song. And I never really kind of go after just this song to listen to it. And then when he said fuck around, I'm like, oh, Zeus is going to be all over that. Ooh, he said fuck around.
Ooh, bad boys.
I'm sure.
Badlands and the bad boys and the Badlands.
It's in there. It's in the notes.
I'm thinking Ted finally said, look, you guys have at least one serious song. Every song can't be fucking about Kissing Kitties. Like, you guys got to have a serious song in there somewhere. Anybody got anything? And Mick brought this thing and Ted did the best he could with it. It's okay. It's not one of my favorites on the album.
Yeah, I just said that this is their attempt at trying to be heavy and harder and get away from the Kissing Kitty and the Shoot the Preacher Down and try to be like a little serious, like, you know, with tough guys. Like, no, you're not. You have blonde hair and black eyebrows. You're not tough. So just stop. It's not a bad song, but Sonny, I think you kind of hit on it exactly. I say this a lot. We say this about Kiss. It's like, this is not what I want. When I listen to the Bullet Boys, like I want more Smooth Up In You. I want more Hard as a Rock. I don't want Badlands. It's not a bad song. It's just not what it's just not what I want to see them do. So yeah, it's okay.
Badlands, written by Bullet Boys. I think this is kind of them trying to be like Queensryche. I don't know. It's trying to be serious, like a little prog-ish. It's just
prog.
It's just the there's it reminds me of some of the tracks from Operation Minecraft. This sticks out like a sore thumb, the way this song is written.
Yeah.
The vocals, the lyrics. I mean, the chorus isn't bad. It's catchy. The vocals are its usual insane. And yes, I did have the part where he says, oh, we don't fool around. Oh, now we don't fuck around. We don't fuck around, fuckos. Ooh. Okay, tough guy. Well, let's go to the last track.
Some may call it F number 9. It's technically F sharp 9, because Mick's story is, this is what happens on a drunken night of jamming and writing songs. And you need to name your newest bitching tune, and you can't think of something, so you name it after the opening chord. Then later, when you sober up, you realize you ain't playing that chord.
Oh God!
So they left them. Mark's story is, we couldn't figure out a name, so we gave up. I actually like the vocal melody. I like the tone of the verses. I like what most people would call the chorus, I guess, which is that, do you want it sleazy? I could make it easy. Like, I like that. Music just kind of plods along. Mark's telling kind of a story. The guitar solo's a little bit all over the place. But when have you ever heard the word Mephistopheles?
Mephistopheles.
Okay.
Nice, so long Greek word.
Now we are in folklore. We went from Kiss and Kitties to like legend folklore.
Mephistopheles, another word for the devil. It's the devil.
Yeah, but
this is your band. Don't ask us.
I was surprised it was in the lyrics. The song's okay. There's parts of it I like, but it just kind of plods along. Like, I'd rather have End on Hard as a Rock somehow. You know what I mean? But yeah. It's okay.
Yeah, I kind of have the same. It's got a decent tempo, decent groove, decent quasi-semi chorus. But why is he howling? Why is he going, ow, 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 ow? Like, what are you?
Because he can.
Like, why?
Because he doesn't want to be Dave Lee Roth.
Like, but I mean, one song he's snapping footballs. This is hot. Like, what? Like, it's, I don't get this fucking album. I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on here.
It's okay, buddy. F number 9, credited to Bullet Boys again. I think this is sleazy fun. I think the vocals are cool. I think this is catchy. I like the chorus. And who doesn't like a fucking song that drops Mephistopheles in the middle?
Yeah, exactly.
Just what the fuck is that? Anyways, the solo is pretty cool. I like it. It's catchy.
Okay.
And that wraps up Bullet Boys' debut. Final thoughts. Let's go to Sonny.
Well, if you haven't picked up on it, I really like this album. The album's piece of my growing up rock history. Like I said before, the Bullet Boys in total to me, yeah, they're kind of like Cinderella, Rat. Like, there's that first album, Tesla. They're that first album that's like lightning in a bottle type stuff. And then every album after that gets worse and worse and worse to me. Out of all the guys I've met, Mick, I haven't met any of the other guys. Nicest guy you'll ever meet. It was 35 years ago when I bought this album. I still listen to it probably once a month in full. I love this album. The problem with the Bullet Boys, the minute you say you are the next blank to, I guess, steal a Van Halen song, you're DOA. You're basically dead on arrival, right? Happened to Kingdom Come. It happened to whoever said they were the next Soundgarden, whoever said they were the next fucking Two Live Crew, whoever the next, you know, Madonna was. It's just the minute that happens, then you can't be yourself. And all people see is what they want to see is comparisons. Here, they give you a lot to compare. It, in the end, it ended up hurting them. It doesn't help. These four guys don't like each other. Never have. Right? This is worse than Motley Crue, except for they didn't kill anybody in a car. That they don't like each other. Right? And it's unfortunate, but Lightning in a Bottle, to me, love the album.
Yeah, it's a disjointed for me. It's disjointed. There's certain songs on here that showcase what the band could be, but I just think there's too many things on this album that are just like just all over the place. They couldn't find like a cohesive sound, a cohesive groove. For me personally, I just think it's the songs that I like, I do like, and I'm glad that I was introduced to them by listening to the album. But yeah, it's I don't know about this one.
All right. For me, this was a pleasant surprise. I really got poisoned by their second song, and I never gave the album a shot. I mean, this guy can sing. Can he still sing now, Sonny?
He has most of his chops left. Like when they were on the 2020 cruise, was he hitting every note like he had? But no, but he's still got the screams, still got the waggle. He's still got the charisma. The guy's got charisma, whether you like it or not, doesn't really matter, but the guy's got something and people like it and they still sound good.
Yeah. Again, everything starts off with like, oh, it's a Sonny pick. Oh, fucking this album sucks. But I'm fair. I give it a listen. If I like it, I like it. You know what I mean? I like this album. I really do. It's got a couple, clunkers on it, but overall I'm pleasantly surprised. So you know what we do next? We rank these. Sonny, it's your album. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Number 10 for me, Badlands.
All right. Number 10 for me. Sorry, Sonny. It's your theme. Crank me up.
It's not even fucking close. And one of the worst songs we've ever done on ARC. There's no fucking point to it. It's dumb. For the love of money. For the love of God. Stop fucking doing bad covers.
Yep. Number 9 for me just happens to be F sharp 9.
Number 9 for me is Money, Money, Money.
Number 9 for me is Crank It Up.
Number 8 for me is Hell on My Heels.
That is also my number 8.
I'm going to go with number 8. I will go with Badlands.
All right, my number 7 is For the Love of Money.
My number 7 is Ode to Joe.
Number 7 for me is F number 9. Or F9, whatever the fuck you call it.
Number 6 for me is Smooth Jalapeno.
What?
Wow, you got that 6.
6.
Jesus Christ, you must really like this album.
Wow.
6 for me is F number 9.
I'll make 6 Shoot the Preacher Down.
My number 5 is Crank Me Up. I think it might be because I've heard it 300 times.
I was just going to say.
I figured that'd be number 10.
Number 5 for me is Badlands.
I bet boys. Let's go with Ode to Joe at 5.
And that is my number 4.
My number 4 is Shoot the Preacher Down.
Number 4 for me, I'm going to go with Hard as a Rock.
Oh, wow.
Number 3 for me is Kissin' Kitty.
That's my number 3.
Number 3 for me is 1-2 Fuck You.
Wow.
Hell on My Heels.
Number 2 for me is Shoot the Preacher Down.
Number 2 for me is Smooth Up In Ya.
You guys are insane. Number two for me is Kissing Kitty. I can't believe I'm saying this.
That makes my number one Hard as a Rock.
Wow. Me and Sonny, same number one. Yep.
Number one, Smooth Up In You. It's the best song.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So our collective number four, by a landslide, was Shoot the Preacher Down. Our collective number three was Smooth Up In You. Our collective number two was Kissing Kitty.
Yeah.
And our collective number one is Hard as a Rock.
All right. There you go. That's the poll. Perfect.
All right, guys. Next, we start ranking this album overall. Yep. Let's first go to album cover. Sonny, you want to give us your top five?
My top five right now, five is Moving Pictures, four is Rage Against the Machine, because, you know, I can't get that sight out of my mind. Homie lighting himself on fire. The three for three is Come and Get It, two is Light It In, and one is Peace of Mind. I actually really like this cover, so I've got it at number 10.
Wow.
Below Black Tiger and right in front of Blizzard of Oz.
Wow. All right. My top five covers are number five, Highway to Hell, Moving Pictures, Rage Against the Machine, Blizzard of Oz, and Purple Rain. This cover is dumb, and its ranking will show that. I don't know if this is worse than Blood and Cum or that boring Van Halen photo. But I, you know, just to keep the joke alive, I am going to put a bullet through an apple above OU812. It'll be number 36 for me.
Wow. All right. Hey, by the way, Sonny, is it Bullet Boys two words?
No. It's one word. If you ask Mark, he will tell you it's Bullet Boys one word with the second B, tilted.
The capital or tilted. Okay. B. Yeah.
All right. Number five, Slide It In, four, Peace of Mind, three, Appetite, two, Blizzard, one, Hotel California. I'll put this slightly above Don't Say No at 32.
God, you'd rather see Feet?
No,
I know. It's above Feet.
I'd rather see a busted apple than Feet.
Yeah.
Well, I'd rather see Blood and Cum than fucking an apple. So that's where we're at. All right, here we go. Albums.
All right, so my top five right now, Appetite for Destruction is five, Slide It In four, Hailstorm three, Purple Rain two, Black Tiger one. I have about 40 Desert Island albums on my list. We have reviewed 10 of them.
Wow.
On this podcast.
Okay.
This is one of those albums.
What?
I have it at number eight.
Oh, my lordy, lordy. And
right below Once Bitten, right above Back for the Attack.
My God. Shoot the Poonie Down is what we need to do right now.
This album makes me feel so good.
Okay. Well, that's if it makes you feel good, that's what it's all about. All right. My top five albums. Number five, Pearl Jam, 10, Rage Against the Machine, Shout at the Devil, Purple Rain, Moving Pictures. The good songs on this album I really, really enjoy, but there's just too much fucking dead weight to lift this album very high. But I do like those top three or four songs, I think, are really strong. But the rest of the album is just, it's just too much dead weight for me. This is going to go at number 32 for me. It's going to go right below OU812 and right above Black Tiger.
All right. So for me, I've got Appetite at 5, 4, Pyromania, 3, Blizzard, 2, Hotel California, number 1, Automatic for the People. Where am I putting this fucking album? Tom is going to want to disown me as a partner, but I am putting this just under Load and above Rage. I'm sorry. No.
You know what's funny about this? Your tastes are slowly starting to approach the terribleness of Sonny. So I'm actually not that surprised that you think that this is better than Rage Against the Machine. That's so mind-numbingly brain-cramping to me that I can't even...
It's also above Purple Rain
But then again, you have Automatic for the People number one. So I think that speaks more volumes than any rankings.
How can that be that bad? You have it in the top 10.
Yeah. I don't have a number one.
It's not a bad thing that I have it at one then.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. So that's kind of more. It's Rage is too top heavy. I think there's two bad songs on this album.
You don't have to explain yourself. I like. Yeah, that's fine.
No, I'm giving you my thoughts on it. And I'm pleasantly surprised these Sunny picks that I would fucking mock somehow. I feel like the Patreon picks are my least favorite picks. Sunny's picks to me are better.
Which I'm so glad you said that. And I'm so glad that is recorded for all of eternity, that you are aligning yourself closer with Sonny Pody than with me and our listeners.
I don't know.
You heard it here. Shoot the Zeus and Pody down. Fuck them both.
I'm just saying, I don't know what's going on, but I do. And he doesn't do me any favors. Every one of my picks, he puts dead last. And he never fucking makes me want to help vote for him. For his albums, but I do. Look what you've done now, Sonny.
Hey, what can I say?
I love it. Well, I've got my pick next, so we'll see what happens. Guys, let's go do what we do at the end of the show, and that is this.
All right, so Rock Hard for this episode, I'm going with a movie. The movie is called Derailed. It was released in 2005. It looks like Tom's seen it before. Basically, it's a crime thriller based on a novel called Derailed by James Siegel. The story is based on what's called a Badger Game Con. So I don't want to ruin the movie for people because you really need to go see it, especially when you hear that Clive Owen and Jennifer Aniston are in the movie.
Awesome movie.
Their characters meet on a train. They don't know each other and they're both married and they get very, very interested in each other. I will tell you without ruining the movie for you that the moral of the story is everybody has a weakness and there's always people out there that are willing to benefit on what your weakness is. If you are a Clive Owen or a Jennifer Aniston fan, and you're wondering how you missed this movie, dude, this is one of those movies that went fucking straight to video. Like, there's no way this movie was going to make it to the big screen. If it did, it lasted a week. But I'm telling you, the movie is worth a watch.
Yes, it is.
Clive and Jennifer Aniston do really, really well in this movie. I was surprised I liked it. Because when I first started, I'm like, wait a second, who's in this movie? And then it hooked me like about 7 or 8 minutes in. Yep. And then it surprised me how good it was.
Yeah.
So, Tom, you've seen this movie.
I saw it when it came out. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought it was. I remember it because you don't want to give too much away, but it's definitely worth checking out. I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. All right. For me, I'm going with a Netflix series that I think I stumbled upon it by going through Netflix, and one of the podcasts I listened to briefly mentioned it, but I had no idea what the hell it was. So it's a series called Beef. Okay. And it stars Steven Yeun from Walking Dead fame. And it also stars Ali Wong. It's everybody in the show is Asian. I believe it's produced by an Asian writer, director, whatever. And it's a series it's called Beef because the two main characters, they get into a beef, a road rage argument. And it's like a black comedy drama. Wikipedia explains it like this. A near accident in a parking lot turns two strangers into enemies. The tit-for-tat relationship that develops leads to escalating acts of revenge as they both learn about each other's lives, identities, and families and become more and more involved. It's crazy. It's unique. It's different. It's well-written and well-acted. I think it's 10 episodes. I'm not even done with it. I'm at episode 8. I've never been bored because you're like, what the fuck are these people doing? What is the end game here? It's worth checking out. It's really interesting. It's called Beef.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Is it in English?
Yeah, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. They're all
it's not like a Korean.
No. They're all Asian American actor. They all speak, you know, perfect English and everything. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Cause I don't know where you were going with that, but like I'll go to Netflix. I'm like, God, that looks interesting. I'm like, oh, I don't want to read subtitles right now.
Netflix has so many, especially in their horror section. They have so many Asian and European horror movies, and I'm like, okay, do I want to watch terrible dubbing or do I want to read this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. The reason why is because my pick is, I'll take it a step back. While we were in Vegas, Tom and I went to the mafia mob, whatever museum.
Yep.
Loved it. Loved
it. Amazing. Very cool.
Towards the end, they have like on the way out the gift shop, they had a thing about, never mind all the mobsters on the wall, but they had a thing about like famous characters from mob movies. And they would have a little segment about them. You know what I mean? There would be De Niro from Godfather 2, this guy from Goodfellas, and just different stuff. And then one of the only ones that I hadn't seen was, and I like this because in the mob museum, they didn't just stick to the Italian genre.
Oh, yeah.
They had a big thing there on Narcos.
Yep.
And I was reading, I'm like, oh shit, they're giving shit away. Cause they were talking about like the character and the actor and what was, and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. So I was like, what mob thing am I going to do when I get back? So I got into Narcos.
Okay. Don't say anything. Cause I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it was great. I loved it.
So you've seen it, Sonny.
Oh yeah.
So I finished season one, season two, season one and season two is all on Pablo Escobar. I don't know, because I enjoy the fact when I watch these series and things like that, that you can go back and then look in Wikipedia and be like, okay, that guy's real. Okay. That guy's based on something. Did this really happen? When did this, because as you said, when you talked about your show, Tom, there's not one fucking episode that you're like, this is dragging.
Yeah.
But the problem with this show is I'm so into it. I can't eat while watching it. I can't not pay attention and fuck around my phone because 90% of it is all in Spanish and you need the subtitles. But it works because of the acting and stuff. So there are obviously American English speaking characters in part of the show. But if you really want to stand it, especially the guy playing Pablo Escobar, because he's a great actor, and you want to hear what Pablo's saying, because the shit that happened, you're just like, no way. What the fuck did this go on all these years? It's shocking. I'm into about season, I'm in episode 5 on season 3. Season 3, I think they transition all the actors and they go into Mexico and they start doing the Mexican cartel.
Yeah.
So I'm about episode 5. I think it stopped after season 3.
Yeah.
But I will say the acting's incredible. Pedro Pascal's in it. He's one of the major DEA agents. Nice. So the acting is fantastic. The shit is fast. And if you like mob stuff and mafia and guns, it'll also piss you off to see the shit that was happening and the sadness of all these human beings that were just fucking annihilated over this crazy drug war. Narcos on Netflix. Fucking awesome. You should check it out.
Nice.
Yeah, it gets me two ways when I watch that stuff. One is I'm like, wait a second. I lived through this. How come I didn't see this shit on TV? Or what? I might not have been paying attention. Like, who knows, right? But then nothing makes me mad more than I'm watching and I've purposely picked something that doesn't have fucking subtitles. And then half the shit's in Spanish.
Yeah.
Right? Because then it's like, oh, now I got to pick Queen of the South. Remember that? I don't know if you ever seen that. Love that show.
I've heard about it. That's
like, yeah. It's only about 10 or 15. Mafia
lady, right?
Yeah. It's only about 10 or 15% Spanish. And it's like, God damn it. Like, I can't do shit. Okay. I guess I got to sit here and watch this now.
You can't right? multitask. You That's can't right. eat your meal and watch. You can't fuck around your phone because you're like, what the fuck is. What did Pablo just say? Because something happens in the next scene. You're like, fuck, I have to go back now. I missed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating shit, though. Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Sonny, tell us where we can find you.
I'm easy to find. GrownUpRock.com. We're a part of Pantheon now, too.
Yes, congrats.
Yeah, so woo-hoo! This is our first full month on Pantheon.
Awesome. Congrats.
The Slack channel, dude.
Oh, dude.
The Slack channel's crazy.
There's way too much going on there.
We can do an episode on the fucking stupidity of the fucking some of the people like, I don't understand. How is this useful for me?
Or they're like, I'm interviewing the guy that tuned the xylophone on the fourth Bob Seger record. Anybody interested? No.
We did get a good interview out of it because we interviewed Tony Zimmerman from Knucklebones.
The guy that does the figure, the statue, the figure.
And by the way, can somebody, God bless him, I love him, somebody decipher when Martin Parboff talks on the Slack channel what the fuck it means? I know the words are in English.
He's too academic. I have no idea what we love that guy. He's too academic.
There's some sort of like an AI app now people can use. Well, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. And then Peter, the guy, one of the heads of
Peter.
Yeah. It's just like, use it if you want to. Well, I don't understand. How can this help me? The guy's like, fucking stop asking me.
Yeah, Peter's like, if you don't want to use it, don't. Other people might.
It's funny. The Slack channel is crazy.
It's fucking crazy.
Man. Yeah. And then PRC Sunday nights on YouTube. Got a good thing going there. I think we're about at 10 years.
Wow. God bless.
Have you been there for about... Now, I know you haven't been there since the beginning.
No, I've been there six.
Six?
Six of the 10 years, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
Jesus. Wow. Nice. Yeah.
Tom, where can people find us?
Yeah, go to our website, shoutoutloudcast.com. If this is your first time hearing the show, well, we apologize that you were introduced to us by listening to a Bullet Boys album review. But we are an all-Kiss podcast. We drop new episodes every Saturday, and then once a month we do these album review crew episodes with Sonny. But yeah, check us out on our website. You can find all of our episodes, Shout Out Loudcast, Album Review Crew, our Zeppelin thing, our other Dome Damage sidecast. All the links are on there. And then we're on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. And again, as Sonny mentioned, we're all in the family now with Pantheon. So check us out. And our email address also is shoutitoutloudcast@gmail.com.
We always like to end on famous last words. Sonny, start us off, buddy.
Oh, this is going to be a good one.
It's so bad.
I dig the way you smile at me. The way you lick your lips. I dig the way you do me with your finger tips.
Was that Belle Biv DeVoe, Do Me?
That was a great song. I love that song.
It is a great song. All right. I don't have, my lyrics are not sexy. They're actually quite offensive once I read them. Just when I thought that he was dead, got right back on his feet, and this is what he said. Black is bad, white is right, but white by day is black by night. What the fuck is going on with
It's the next line that's great. Shoot the preacher down. Yeah,
exactly. What the fuck are we doing here?
I thought we got rid of preacher down. All the potential minds that we went over when we talked about race before.
Nope.
We have to end on it.
And I end with he wrote it. I didn't write it. He wrote it.
All right. So I'm going to end with these words. We've said it a few times already. One, two. And I'm pointing to Sonny and Tom. Fuck you.
Nice. Greatest lyric ever.
I'm going to use it. Okay, you guys ready? Okay. One, two, fuck you.
Do that when you start coaching hockey next year. Everybody in the huddle. Ready? One, two. No. One, two, fuck you.
Hey, ref, give me 1 second. No. Give me one, two, fuck you.
Yes.
Yes. Fuck you too. All right, Sonny, Tom, Loudcasters, everybody out there, Bullet Tards, what else is left? Thank you.
Always a good time, Chief, Zeus, We're back, baby. Chief.
Guys,
I'm never going to let that go.
Don't. That's okay. I'll own it.
Walk away, Chief. Walk away.
Great episode, Sonny. Fun pick. Everybody, we love you out there, especially all of you kitty kissers. And Zeus, as always, my friend, thank you.
Peace out, Girl Scout.
Jack be nimble, Jack be quick. Jack burnt off his fucking dick.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.